Same-sex couples. Equality Illinois Executive Director Bernard Cherkasov says he's optimistic about how Supreme Court justices will rule on the two measures. He says at the minimum, Prop 8 will be struck down. But Cherkasov says same-sex couples are anxious.
Because, you know, these couples have been in relationships, some of them for decades. You know, they've built their lives together. They share every moment of happiness and every moment of sadness together. And the last thing they want to worry about is, you know, having their fate in the hands of nine people who are in a democratic constitutional setting, but who are still deciding whether their love, whether their family is valid or real or not.
Meanwhile, opponents of same-sex marriage say by striking down DOMA, the true understanding of marriage is undermined. And Lori Higgins with the Illinois Family Institute says there are no substantive and ethical reasons to legalize same-sex marriage.
To know if they're treated unequally, you have to first know what marriage is. If it's just an institution of affirming love, then the government has no interest in it. The government couldn't care less who loves whom. And then if it's just about who loves whom, and it's not inherently about procreation and child rearing, then why can't platonic friends get married?
An expert on constitutional issues says the Supreme Court's ruling may not be a simple yes or no. Lisa McElroy, who teaches law at Drexel University in Philadelphia, says the High Court could refuse to rule on Prop 8 on the grounds that those who brought the lawsuit didn't do it properly. As for DOMA, McElroy says its fate is harder to predict, but that it could be struck down on the grounds that the federal government has no authority in defining what marriage is.
And that would actually be a problem in some places because it would be left up to the states to define marriage. And for people who believe in marriage equality, that would mean that some states could still legally say to gay people, you can't marry your partner.
Other than filing joint federal taxes, Andre Simpian and Joe Robinson don't believe the range of outcomes in either Supreme Court case would alter their lives greatly. But Andre says they want to be seen as a normal couple who have the same rights as everyone else.
You know, like whenever you start thinking about it, you start getting a little bit angry, right? I mean, this is not something that, you know, I decided on being, right? It's not something that anyone really chooses to be because it makes your life more difficult in many ways. So to have that be a reason why I don't have the same rights as everyone else is just, you know, makes your blood boil a little bit.
All those tracking Prop 8 and DOMA seem to agree it will likely be late June before the Supreme Court issues decisions in the two cases. I'm Jeff Bosser, Illinois Public Media.
To see all of our coverage of the same-sex marriage issue in Illinois, visit us online at will.illinois.edu. In the last year, a Springfield-based historical group has traveled to six countries. Its goal, to find documents written or tied to Abraham Lincoln. WUIS's Chris Slaby talked with Stacy McDermott, the assistant director of The Papers of Abraham Lincoln. Here's the report.
This last year has been a pretty big one for The Papers of Abraham Lincoln.
It has. We've always known that there were Lincoln documents in Japan, and because we had done legal papers several years ago, and we had photocopies of some legal documents that were located in Japan, so we knew there were documents there. We always suspected that there would be documents in foreign, you know, repositories, national archives, diplomatic correspondence specifically. But this year marked, you know, our first real efforts to get out there and try to find some documents internationally. And we acquired images of documents from Switzerland, Portugal, both national capitals there. We have inventoried documents at the British Library in the UK, and we also inventoried some documents at the Canadian National Archives in Ottawa.
And these Lincoln papers that were found, were they written when Lincoln was president or even possibly before then?
The collection that's in Japan at Meisei University, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing Meisei correctly, it's a university that's in the Tokyo suburbs. There was a businessman who collected these Lincoln documents, and they range all the way from very early Lincoln's New Salem days all the way to the presidency.
Going through the papers that have been found, has there been something particularly interesting, fascinating that you've come across?
Well, there's, you know, everybody has their own sort of special document that they've found. We have five researchers working in Washington, D.C., and we have a researcher there who was researching through the Surgeon General's reports and papers, and she found a handwritten account which was written just a couple of days after Lincoln died. And this physician, this young physician, was the first to attend to Lincoln when he was shot at Ford's Theater. And a couple of days after Lincoln died, he sat down and he wrote a very formalized medical account of what they found, what the wound looked like, how they treated Lincoln. And it's just a very close piece of history to the actual moment that Lincoln died. So that's why it was quite interesting. This guy, right after it happened, he sat down and wrote what happened. And so it's a really close point in time. And so that's why it created such a stir.
I believe you also came across quite the find down in Australia. Could you tell us about that?
We found a lot of interesting things nationally, but one of the cool things that we found in Australia was at the National Maritime Museum in Sydney, Australia. There is it's a kind of an oversized document, really pretty, kind of cool document that's got, it's called a sea letter. And ships, sailing vessels that were traveling in international waters, they had to carry like a passport, essentially, for their ship. And what's really cool about these documents is they have four columns of text, and they're in four different languages. And the president had to sign them when these ships were traveling in international waters. And this particular one that we found in Australia was for a ship, a whaling vessel called the Gyra Swift. And what's really cool about this particular one is that the shipwright who built the Gyra Swift, was an African-American who had been a former slave in the United States and became a fairly well-known shipwright. So that just kind of adds a little element to what is, you know, visually a cool document, but this one is historically interesting as well.
What's the significance of these papers? What do they mean? Why are they important?
Well, I think for a lot of people, Lincoln carries a lot of resonance for them. Everybody has their own reason why they love Lincoln. People all over feel connected to him. Partly, I think, it's because of the log cabin to the presidency sort of story. It's, you know, a poor man makes good kind of story. I think people like that story. I also think that his connection to the Civil War and his being assassinated also adds to kind of the historical drama. And what's interesting to me, it's really been realized in the last year, is how fascinating people outside of the United States find Lincoln. Part of what we're doing is fulfilling that desire. People want to know more and more about Lincoln, and so there's more that we can learn about Lincoln. But also, too, I think what we're doing, we're collecting these documents that it's not only about Lincoln, but it's also about the context of Lincoln. The 19th century is a fascinating period in American history, and there's a lot of things going on with industrial revolution, politics is changing, roles for women are changing, there's all these things going on, and then right dab smack in the middle of the century you have, this Civil War. So I think historically it's an interesting time, and by collecting these papers, nobody will really ever be able to do any kind of work on the mid-19th century without consulting this project because of the different types of documents and the things that they bring to light.
That was Stacy McDermott from the Papers of Abraham Lincoln speaking with Illinois Public Radio's Chris Slaby. The papers are part of the Center for State Policy and Leadership at the University of Illinois in Springfield. McDermott said the collection in Japan was by far the biggest find, with more than 100 documents. And in total, the Papers of Abraham Lincoln now have more than 94,000 documents connected to Abraham Lincoln. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine here on WILL.
WILL programming is made possible by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to enjoy Krannert Uncorked, a weekly free wine tasting almost every Thursday at 5 p.m. in the lobby. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Jobs and the Sequester, we'll look at the new dip in job creation, plus Jackie Robinson broke the color line in Major League Baseball. The new movie 42 tells the story. The director is with us. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Tonight from 9 to 11 on AM 580.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 8th of April, 2013. It's the birthday of Barbara Kingsolver, born in Annapolis, Maryland, 1955, grew up in a house in an alfalfa field in rural Kentucky. Her dad was a country doctor down there. When she was 7, her father moved the family to the Congo for a year so he could work as a medical missionary. Came back to Kentucky, and she kept on keeping her journal, eventually writing stories and poems. She was a tall, thin, bookish girl. She said, "I wanted to read Anna Karenina
and everybody else wanted to do stuff in the back of cars. She was a good writer. She was a good pianist. She thought it was impractical to major in music, so she majored in biology instead. Moved to Tucson, wrote a thesis on termite behavior for her master's degree. Got a job doing technical writing. She entered a short story contest sponsored by an alternative weekly in Phoenix and won it, kept on writing stories. Then she got pregnant and developed insomnia, so at night she would take her typewriter into the closet and write. Realized that she was writing a novel about a young woman desperate to escape her life in rural Kentucky and moved to Tucson, and that novel was The Bean Trees. Got good reviews when it came out in 1988. Wrote two more novels, and then one about a missionary family in the Belgian Congo, based on the journal she had kept as a girl. She did a lot of research for it, memoirs of missionaries, and she studied the Kikongo language and read the Bible over and over, traveled to Central Africa. And after many years, she published The Poisonwood Bible. It was a huge bestseller when it came out in 1998. Barbara Kingsolver, who said, "The best research gets your fingers dusty and your shoes dirty, especially because a novel is made of details. I had to know what a place smelled like, what it sounded like. There's no substitute for that." And it's the birthday of the investigative journalist who broke the story of the My Lai massacre, Seymour Hersh, born Chicago, 1937, started out as a copy boy for the Chicago City News Bureau, worked for the Associated Press, had a hard time getting the story of the My Lai massacre published. Life magazine, Look magazine turned it down, but it was sold to newspapers through a little syndicate, and it made Seymour Hersh's reputation. He won the Pulitzer Prize for it in 1970. Here's a poem for today by George Bilger, Threepenny Opera. The elderly modern dance instructor and his elderly wife are dancing in top hats and tails, doing a court vial number as old as their marriage. They've reached that age when the body is starting to wonder how it got here, when it has become strange even to itself and moves around uncertainly as if looking for a lost pair of glasses. They do not mean for what they're doing to be a parody, but of course it is. The word means something like to sing alongside.